Township?
Township? Lake?
Somebody we'll find out.
Who can give us an answer to maybe all of that, maybe even why we have the name Sheffield in the area here, is Eddie Herdendorf, who is a historian with the Sheffield Historical Society, Sheffield Village Historical Society, and you're celebrating the bicentennial. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I guess take us back, what, 1815? Is that when it was first settled?
That's right. We actually started off as part of the Connecticut Western Reserve. And as soon as the War of 1812 was over and people could settle here safely, folks from Sheffield, Massachusetts came here and picked out sites, and they purchased an entire township, which was called, eventually became known as Sheffield Township, one of 200 townships in the reserve. Through time, though, they found that Black River sort of separated the two communities, and the villages or the communities separated, leaving Sheffield Township over on the west side in what was called Sheffield Lake Village, all where we are now. Over time, though, there was a difference in kind of lifestyles. The folks along the lake were mainly cottage dwellers from Cleveland and were more interested in that kind of lifestyle versus the farmers down here in this part. So there was another separation took place around 1933, leaving Sheffield Village here, where we are, and Sheffield Lake along the lake, and they eventually became a city when they reached 5,000 population, 1960.
So people actually were staying there all year round, right?
That's right. Actually, probably during the Depression, when housing was at a premium, and they converted a lot of those little cottages to year-round dwellings.
You find that up and down the lake shore. There's those communities that kind of broke away from the farmland inland to the lake, which had a whole different attitude towards it.
Very much. Avon and Avon Lake is another example.
Well, let's take a guess. What are some of the things that are happening for this bicentennial celebration?
Well, it's pretty exciting. What we decided to do is get all three Sheffields back together again for this year. And we're actually claiming all the area, even that Lorraine annexed. We're going back to the original township, which would go all the way to the west to where the high-level Henderson Bridge in Lorraine would be located. So we're taking that, the history of that area, and celebrating the early pioneers who came in and settled this land and began to clear the land and develop their farms. One of the things we're doing on August 2nd is dedicating a monument to these folks, a granite spire 10 feet tall. And that'll be by one of the old village dwelling, or actually a schoolhouse. It's now the village city hall or village hall. And we're actually in the process right now of laying the concrete and getting the monument ready. It'll be dedicated then to those pioneers, and sort of ends up with an inscription that says, "We are in your debt."
You mentioned annexation. What happened, why, and when?
Okay, this happened at the very end of the 1800s, 1894. Tom Johnson came from Pennsylvania, where he had a steel mill, and was looking for a site to develop another steel mill. Mainly to make pipe. And he selected the Black River, looked at an ideal harbor where you could bring in iron ore from the upper lake areas, you bring in coal, limestone was nearby, everything you needed to make make steel. But he didn't want to have his mill in two different communities. And so he convinced Lorraine to annex, that was part of the deal, to annex a good chunk of Sheffield Township on the would be on the west side of the river. And that when that happened, and through time there have been more pieces annexed, so that Sheffield Township is left with a rather minor holdings now compared to their original size.
We're talking this morning with Eddie Herdendorf, who is a historian for the Sheffield Village Historical Society, and again, the bicentennial is happening this year. Before we went on the air, you kind of talked a little bit about your family history, so tell us a little bit about that. How far back does it go, and what kind of personal things do you have from that historical time?
Well, it goes all the way back to those original settlers. Some of them, the families that are in my family, Garfield, Day family, the Roots, and even the Burles, they were the original proprietors and owners of property. And they came here in 1815, selected land sites, and began then to raise their families. They were from Sheffield, Massachusetts, or that general area. Some of them had large families, nine children. They came by all kinds of methods. The Garfields, who I live in my great-great-grandfather's house, just walked with an axe and a rifle. And he finally met a young gal from Avon, and about 5 years later, and most of the children were born in a log house he built. And about 1830, he was able to build the house that I live in now. What happened was, so the other family, some of them actually came by boats. They actually had a boat built in Schenectady, New York, sailed it up the Mohawk River around. They actually had to tow it around Niagara Falls on a wagon and put it back in and came here that way, by that method. Others came by wagons, a pretty arduous 600-mile journey.
You have a picture on the front of this bicentennial. I would call it quite a history. It's about a phone book size, if I can give kind of a description of it a little bit like that. Almost of horses being brought in, men with guns, women on horseback sort of just coming in into the area. We find that a lot when we do a different spotlights and we go around the communities. The original is they show up and there's just forest for the most part, or lots of land that has to be cleared. So it was all done by the people who showed up on the land, and they did what they had to do to make it to survive then.
Well, that's right. It was totally forested, except for maybe the floodplains areas along the river flats. Those would be good croplands to start off with. You might put your corn there first, but you're going to need quite a bit of timber just to keep warm. You can imagine the amount of logs you'd have to cut down. So it was clearing the land was for pastures and for farming, but also to provide a material to build your home and to keep yourself warm.
We're going to have more coming up in just a moment here as we talk with Eddie Herdendorf, historian, about the Sheffield Lake area and their bicentennial. As our spotlight from Sheffield continues on WELL.
Cloudy skies, 64 degrees.
It is 7:20 at AM 930 WEOL. I'm Bruce Van Dyke along with Craig Adams, and we are at the French Creek Nature Center. Look at all the eyes upon us. We have a lot of, I guess, it's the spectators of there's like a bison, there's a small bear, deer.
American badger, mountain lion, eastern fox squirrel.
And don't forget the American kestrel, too, right behind us as well. All mounted on the wall here at the French Creek Nature Center. And of course, there's next to us is where they have the True North Cultural Arts, where they have the performance of the pajama game. I don't know if you read the article that pajama is not the way you want to say it. It's pajama.
Okay.
So we have to worry about that. But joining us, continuing on, talking with Eddie Herdendorf, historian here at the center, the historian for the Sheffield, looking at the bicentennial. I like looking at the old map of Lorain County, where everything was just kind of a big square. Every place was kind of put together. Ridgeville is still Ridgeville. Black River here, which became, I guess, Lorain area, the big area that's Sheffield. What other things do you have planned for the bicentennial?
Well, one of the major events is coming up is going to be our annual picnic that always takes place in August. August is an interesting time for pioneers. It's the time after crops have been planted, everything is growing, and you don't have to be busy harvesting yet. So they'd always get together and have a picnic. So we're redoing that as a bicentennial picnic and inviting folks from far and wide who have an association with Sheffield. Some of the old families that live as far away as California are coming. And it's going to be a time where we're going to look at the archaeological work that we've been doing at the site, tours of the old Burl House. We'll even have a chance to play Addle Addle. Addle Addle is a throwing device that the Native Americans used to shoot perhaps buffalo and bear. In fact, I've got a targets that I've made out of large cartons that were file cabinet cartons. One's a bear and one's a buffalo. And if you can spear that with this Addle Addle, you'll get a certificate. And that'll be fun. We'll have an original play, a string band kind of wandering through the area playing songs from back in the 1800s. And some of the original recipes that folks used back then. The Burl family's famous chicken pot pie.
Talk about the Burl family and their house and its impact. I know that it has related to the Underground Railroad as well. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, time? The Burrell family is one of the original proprietors. Jabez Burrell and John Day actually purchased the entire township from the original proprietor over in Connecticut, who never visited the site. In fact, he sent an agent here that was run off by the Indians back in the about 1810. After the Burrells purchased the land, they came here and selected sites for their farms and their friends and went back home, got their families, and made their way over here by a number of ways, horse and buggy, horse and wagon, often pulled by an ox, and by boat even. They arrived here, and their home site became called Sheffield Center, and the Day family lived just across the street, and the other families were in a close cluster. Only a year after they were here, they built the first school and then the first church. And the first building was used for both purposes, just a log building. It eventually was replaced by a brick school back in the 1880s. It's still there on the Burrell property. It's part of Metro Parks, same property now. Later on, the son of Jabez, Robbins Burrell, was a abolitionist. And he, as were many of the folks here from New England, and they supported carrying of helping the runaways. And one of their friends, by the name of Captain Aaron Root, who was another great-great-grandfather of mine, operated boats on Lake Erie, and he would transport them to Canada. And that history is kind of told in a historic marker at the Burrell site, and also another historic marker down in Lorraine, right at the Black River Landings, where the boats would leave from with the runaways.
Besides the historic markers that get put there or homesteads that still stand, cemeteries are a place where we can learn all about the history of areas, too. Do we have a place like that in this?
They're really repositories of history. We have two cemeteries that go back to the mid-1800s. Garfield Cemetery is a general cemetery for the public up on North Ridge, which is the southern part of the village, and the St. Teresa Cemetery, the Catholic cemetery. Another wave of settlers came in about 1840 from Germany during some of the rebellions and rough times that were going on over there, and they settled in the area near Abbey Road in Colorado and eventually formed their parish there, St. Teresa, and their cemetery is very rich with history of those early settlers. In fact, we're going to run a walking tour. We already had a walking tour earlier this year of the Garfield Cemetery, talking about some of the important folks that were there. And the early settlers in September will come up in St. Teresa.
Eddie, at what point in your life did you become so interested in what preceded you?
Well, when you have when you have that kind of family history, my grandfather telling me all these stories, you probably know how it is. Oh no, Grandpa, not that story again, but you'd love to hear them again today.
Yeah.
And just growing up with that kind of interest, and because I was away at college and had another kind of career teaching at Ohio State and directing a laboratory and doing research in other fields, oceanographic. But when I came back here after I was on the emeritus status on the faculty, I felt maybe we needed a historical society, and a group was got together and created it. And that really, once you do that, people begin to open up their family histories to you and bring photographs to you and share those stories that are so rich and interesting.
Any interesting photographs or personal historical artifacts you may have that you find fascinating? Or
well, I'm going to give a talk coming up on the 21st, just down the road, about the pioneers who went out some of them went to the Gold 49ers. And a gentleman came by yesterday with a rifle from 1840s that probably were the kind that they carried along with them for me to take to use as a demonstration at that talk. And that kind of thing happens all the time where people bring things. They say, well, my kids don't want to have them anymore, and we need a place to put this. So we've received a lot of very nice artifacts over time that we keep in it's called the Sheffield History Center. It's on Detroit Road. And that's kind of where we try to keep these files and keep these things so it'll be passed on.
I'm looking at your book here, The Bicentennial History of Sheffield, and there's a picture here of Sheffield Village's first road grader going back to 1928. And Bruce, it looks a little scary to me. It looks like it's got three steering wheels.
Well, it looks as has metal wheels, I think, and the two steering wheels up there.
One, two, three.
Probably to turn whatever the different, it's like some kind of almost like a piece of farm equipment, but more.
Well, my cousin Frank Root found this in a farm here in Sheffield and had it restored.
Wait,
and
he found the actual item, not the picture you're talking
about.
He found the actual road grader.
And had it restored.
And he's had it restored. Those three wheels are weird. I watched him one time drive it. Those things control the direction, of course, that the wheels go, but they also control the angle, pitch of the road grader, the height of the road grader. All these controls need to be done. All the roads in Sheffield, of course, at that time, were just sand and just earth, and they needed to be graded periodically to keep the ruts out.
Yeah. Well, I wonder with the Black River, how far was it before they started building a bridge to get across? Because, you know, with roads, you think, why is the road going like this? And you realize, well, there used to be a tree there, and the guy who was driving just decided to go left of it or something to that
effect. What they had, because of the river, it's such a wide valley, we didn't have the sort of aqueduct bridges that we do today that span the whole valley. They had to go down these rather steep banks and build the bridges, really probably in the late 1800s. They were fords at first, where you would just try to go across a shallow place. And the bridges were built, metal span bridges. But my grandfather used to tell me about the old cars that had a gravity feed gasoline tank. Because of that, they'd have to back up the hill. They could cross the river going down forward, turn the car around, and back up the hill on the other side. They were pretty steep and treacherous, particularly in any kind of slippery weather. So eventually, about 1936, the first aqueduct bridge was built across the Black River on Detroit Road.
What was the industry really in this community at that time, or for the most part, that kept it sustained?
Well, they were agriculturally based. One of the Burl House had a cheese factory, and that still stands. And we'll have tours of that at our picnic, where they would make cheese. And actually, the railroads were coming in about that time. It could be transported. Eventually, the populations got so large here that there was not excess milk. The milk was being used by the communities, by the people living here. So they had the cheese industry sort of waned at that time. Other things, there weren't much in the way of industry other than the steel mills that we talked about coming in the late 1800s. Early on, it was pretty much subsistence. Everybody had to build something of their own. There were blacksmith shops and things like that. But a farm was self-contained. You almost could make and raise everything you needed except salt. Salt was a commodity that had to be brought in. It's very important for preserving meat and such. In fact, the first settlers by boat that came in brought a ton of salt. They knew they could sell it. That was a commodity they could make money with.
Yeah. Even if they just knew under the lake there was plenty that they could possibly have gotten to if they knew how to get down there at that time.
Unfortunately, it's down about 1,500 feet.
Well,
makes it a little bit tough.
Any famous people coming out of this area or somebody that made a really impact on the world in a sense?
I'm just trying to think of the Burl and Captain Burl and Captain Root that we talked about. Their impact was not maybe global, but certainly their impact was important in terms of standing up for something they believed in. They actually created a branch of Oberlin College at the Burl House, where some of the first black students to be able to attend classes with white students, Native Americans, could attend. And I think that kind of heritage is important. Thinking of a particular individual, there are folks that invented things that were here. The Ryder family invented, actually he wasn't here at the time, but his children were. He invented the steam engine valving system that was on the Monitor, the Civil War ship.
Very interesting. And I don't know if we want to just, we talked about history, but Craig sent me an article related to what the Cleveland Museum of Natural History is involved with, doing archaeological expeditions in this area, And they apparently at some point they've unearthed something that could be over 4,000 years old. So you can see the history beyond even our history or your history here.
Oh, yes. In the book, I kind of mentioned that it's a bicentennial history, but we need to go back many more. In fact, the oldest evidence we have of Indians in the general area was about 13,700 years ago. We actually have a ground sloth that was found in a bog near Norwalk that there are butcher marks on, that the Indians had butchered that meat. You can see the striations. And we were able to date the bones of that. And Dr. Brian Redman, who I'm going to meet this morning over at the Burrell site, is in charge of that research and at the Burrell site. The Historical Society is a co-sponsor of that research going on there. And we just finished a four-week field school there and found this dwelling floor from a 4,000-year-old archaic Indian site. It's really, really spectacular. It's quite a find.
It's amazing. We see some of these things. We think sometimes when they go far into the Middle East somewhere to look for something in history and do archaeological things, but things like that are taking place right here in Northeast Ohio, just under our feet. We want to thank you for stopping in, Eddie Herndorf, historian with the Sheffield Village Historical Society. If people want to find out more about the society, you always need volunteers, I'm sure, and people who are interested in the same kind of passion. What can they do to
One thing you can do is look at our website right now. It's sheffieldbicentennial.org. That's got a list of all the events coming up, all the lectures. There's a lecture at least once a month, a bicentennial lecture. And all kinds of activities. That's the best place to get started.
I did see online that also there's online newsletters. They can pass newsletters just to see about some of the things. It's always great.
All of our newsletters are online at sheffieldvillage.com. Go to the Historical Society's website or our address, and you'll find all of our newsletters there.
That's great. Eddie, thank you for coming in this morning. Appreciate
your
time. Eddie Herndorf with the Historical Society.